Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this surprise edition of the BunnyCast. Let's be honest, every episode of the BunnyCast is a surprise. I don't know they're coming. I can't imagine how you would. Anyway, I hope you're well. Happy New Year? Are we still saying that? I mean, as I record this, I mean, I've been led to believe it's 2024, but that seems unlikely because that's no way, because then I would be quite old and stuff, and I don't think that's happening. So I'm pretty sure that I'm just caught up in a very elaborate practical joke that my wife has managed to change all the things and get people on the telly to say it's New Year and stuff, but it's definitely still 2016 as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I hope wherever you are, in whatever time period you're in, you're enjoying it. The reason behind this surprise episode is there is a new Bunny McGarry, a Bunnyverse novella, to be more exact. He does kind of feature, but it's a weird sort of way. Basically, Other Plans, long story short, Other Plans, which was the fourth book in the McGarry Stateside series, which came out in October. I actually genuinely only realised when rereading that while I was doing the edits that it had a knock-on effect on stuff on Dublin. Ironically enough, it happens basically the first chapter of that book has a knock-on effect and stuff that happens in Dublin, and it didn't occur to me while I was writing the book until I reread it. But actually, I've been quite enjoying the idea of it, so I decided to write a novella, and that's where Meanwhile in Dublin comes from. Now, let me be very clear in this. Basically, later this year, so like sometime in 2024, we are releasing a Bunny McGarry, a short story and novella, basically all the shorter fiction in one collection, because people have been asking for that. So what we're going to do is it'll be ebook, audiobook, and print. So we get all the Bunny stuff that's been previously bitty and available in places, all in one place. And included in that will be Meanwhile in Dublin, including on the audiobook recorded by Morgan C. Jones, the wonderful Mr. Morgan C. Jones, as always. But if you'd like to get Meanwhile in Dublin for free and early, basically in the next couple of weeks, you can. Basically, as a thank you for anyone who pre-orders the hardback of Relight My Fire, which is the fourth book in the Strange Time series, coming out on January 25th. If you would like to basically charts work on hardbacks in Britain and Ireland and stuff. So that's why we're as a thank you for anyone who buys the hardback, where you can get a copy of Strange Times newspaper, you can get a signed book plate so your book will be signed, and we will also give you access to the ebook / audiobook of Meanwhile in Dublin, as I said, read by the wonderful Morgan C. Jones. And yeah, I think it's a couple hours long, just about, and it's a lot of fun. It's actually, I can tell you, the first chapter of it, Wonderwife said it was her favourite ever opening to any of the Bunny stuff, which was is interesting. I mean, I enjoy it. I particularly enjoy the fact that, well, a character has a go at Shakespeare. And I do distinctly remember, my wife used to work in educational publishing, and I distinctly remember after a few points making the case that I believe Terry Pratchett is better than Shakespeare. But they're all very polite, but nobody was backing me up on that. But I'm going to hang on to that take. I will defend that till my dying day, ladies and gentlemen. Sir Terry Pratchett, rest in peace. I'm looking at a little bronze bust of him sitting beside me on my desk right now. So as I said, Meanwhile in Dublin, it will all be in the collections coming out. So don't worry, you won't miss out on anything if you don't want to get the hardback. But if you do, you will get it earlier. All you have to do that is just obviously pre-order from wherever you like, your local bookshop, your local indie, you buy it online, whatever. And then go to thestrangertimes.co.uk. And just let Wonderwife know by sending us an email on the email address that is there, and you'll see everything else you can get, including the chance for your name to be, for a character to be named after you in the next Strange Times book. Which, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'll probably have to figure out, I might have to pass it by you first, just because I think there's laws. People might get objections compared to what character they're going to be. But yes, all that there, so. Meanwhile in Dublin, I think it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed writing it. It was kind of a nice break. That's what I like doing, the short stuff. It's a nice kind of break from what else you're doing, and you just get to tell a fun little story, and you're in, you're out. So there's some catching up with everybody in Dublin was also a lot of fun. It's like the MCM crew and stuff like that. And then I've done the classic thing where weirdly it sort of ended up supposed to be a thing on its own, and it's ended up having an impact on future things, because I never sort of think these things through. And then when I get to a point and go, oh God, yeah, there's a knock-on effect, which is essentially I'm never going to stop writing books because I keep accidentally starting off storylines I need to finish, and I can never actually just finish everything. There's always going to be something else growing out with the thing. It's like you chop off one head and, you know, seven more pop up. So anyway, without further ado, the one thing I should also tell you is I'll be doing events around the UK over the next couple of weeks, basically the last couple of weeks in January. Let me see, I'll get these right. January 22nd, yes, I'm in Kibworth in the Midlands, which is like Leicestershire. There's a lovely independent bookshop there. Very excited about doing that. That's the 22nd. The 23rd, I'm going to be in Leeds with my great friend Gary Delaney doing Waterstones there, which should be an absolute laugh. That'll be a book event unlike any other, seeing as it's not really going to be... Normally, these are terribly serious affairs. Mine aren't, to be fair. But I'd imagine myself and a stand-up comedian who lived together for about a decade, I'd imagine it's not going to be much about books, if I'm honest. But it should be a good laugh. And, of course, I'll be signing stuff at all of these events. Liverpool on the 24th with wonderful Sarah Moorhead. And then on the 25th, I'm going to be in Manchester, hometown gig, with the fabulous Phil Mealy. We've done the last couple with him. They're always an absolute blast. And then the week after, on the... I'm pretty sure it's the 30th. It's the Tuesday of that week. This is so more of a treat for me than it is for you. Anyone who's a friend of my workers or has read my emails over the year, Christopher Buckmeyer is a massive, him and Terry Pratchett, basically my two all-time favorite authors, and bless him, lovely man. He read The Stranger Times, gave us a lovely quote for it and stuff, and we are doing an event in Glasgow, Waterstones, on the 30th of January, me and Chris Brookmoyer, which I am so looking forward to. It's technically supposed to be about Relight My Fire and my books in general. And honestly, I want to ask him questions more than I want him to ask me questions. It might end up being a weird interview where I'm not answering questions, but asking them. But absolutely thrilled for that. He's a real hero of mine. I've been lucky enough to meet him a few times, and he's just such a nice man. And so that's all going to be great. And there will also be an online thing on the 26th, on Friday the 26th. We'll have an online launch because we appreciate not everyone can get to those events. But if you can, all the Waterstones events, are tickets for them are on the Waterstone website. And the Kibworth one is on Kibworth Books. Just look them up. They're in Leicestershire there. And they're also, you'll find details on our website as well, linking to them. So that's all of that. As I said, this will be, meanwhile in Dublin, will be coming out in the collection later in the year at some point. We haven't figured out exact details, but it won't be that long. I'm guessing probably the first half of the year. So don't worry. You will get to hear it eventually, but until then, you get to enjoy Morgan C. Jones reading the first chapter, which, again, Wonder Wife says is the her favourite starting chapter of any of the money stuff. I might actually start doing a survey of people. Do let me know on social media and stuff what your favourite first chapter is in any of my books. I'm always curious about that, because weirdly, first chapters are... they feel quite big. I don't know. I guess it's just because it's the start of the project and you want it to go well, sort of thing. So I do end up spending probably a lot. And that's the nature of the fact that it's just the first thing there. You end up going over it and over and over it quite a lot. So I'm always pleased when people say they like the first chapter, because you end up investing quite a lot of time and effort, because I guess it sets the tone for the whole thing. Anyway, I'm rambling now more so than usual. So without further ado, I hope to see you all at events and stuff like that. Thank you as always for all the fantastic support. This will be out in a collection later in the year, but if you want, you know what to do if you want to get it before then. And without further ado, here's Brilliant Morgan reading chapter one of Meanwhile in Dublin.
Chapter one. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. Bit of a gobshite, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you something else. Chuck felt his hands tighten their grip around the shovel, and, for a fraction of a second, he enjoyed the image of him pulling it out of the ground, climbing out of this hole, and smashing it into Money's stupid, ever-talking face. Instead, Chuck opted to try to solve his problem with words.
No, he snapped. You won't tell me something else. What you'll do is shut up and hold the light like you're supposed to be doing.
What's got you in a mood? Asked Money.
This was enough to make Chuck, as keen as he was to get this over with, pause. He was aware he was considered a miserable sod. Chuck was short for Chuckles, after all, and he'd long ago resigned himself to that annoying nickname sticking. He didn't consider himself a morose person, just a realistic one. He'd been alive for 41 years now, and had long since concluded that the world was an awful place, full of awful people doing awful things to each other, and a lot of them were also awful drivers. Admittedly, he wasn't on the moral high ground to be passing judgment on anyone else, given what he was currently up to.
What's got me in a mood? Repeated Chuck. Seriously, It's 4 in the bleeding morning, and I'm standing here in the pissing rain digging up a grave. Why don't you apply your university-educated brain to the problem and see if you can draw your own conclusion?
Money shook his head.
The people in this organisation have a very negative attitude towards higher education.
Chuck resumed shoveling, deliberately tossing some of the dirt upwards so that it landed on Money's shoes.
No, we don't. What we have is a low tolerance for the fact you keep mentioning your bleeding degree in English all the time. We're a criminal gang, not LinkedIn. Nobody gives a shite about your CV.
Excuse me for trying to better myself.
Better yourself? You know why the lads call you Money? It's because it's what you come from. You've not shown any ability to generate any.
I do all right, said Money, sounding hurt.
No, you don't. How I know that is, it's 4 in the morning, and you're standing in the middle of Glasnevin Cemetery holding a torch while I dig up a coffin. That is not the kind of job they give to a high flyer.
Yeah, well, at least I'm not the one down in the hole.
The only reason you're not in the hole is that if I'd put you in charge of digging, the hole would only be about a foot deep by now, because you've never done a decent day's work in your life. You finished your degree in prison because not only are you work shy, you're also a cokehead who's obsessed with greyhounds. What you should have done is given the cocaine to the dogs. That way, some of them might have actually won a race, but instead, you snorted the coke, dug yourself a metaphorical hole with the bookies, and then tried to get out of it by dealing. Only you were dumb enough to deal to the granddaughter of a senior judge who promptly blew her nostrils out while ODing on the stepped-on shite you were peddling. Have I got any of that wrong?
I was unlucky.
No,
said Chuck.
You weren't. You were born lucky. You came flying out of Armagh and landed on a nice soft bed of privilege. You had to make several mistakes to end up here. Whereas, a lad from the Fatima Mansions just has to make half of one. Believe you me, if I'd had your chances in life, I'd not be spending my Friday night digging up a coffin while a mouthy gobshite does a bad job of holding the light.
I know what's got you in a bad mood.
Chuck paused again. Enough was enough. There was only so much a man could take. If Money so much as hinted at him being unlucky in love, or anything within an arse's roar of that, someone was going to find this grave with an extra body in it in the morning. It had not been a good few weeks. A couple of months ago, the big boss, Liam O'Darcy, had instructed Chuck to take Carol, Liam-O's widowed mother, shopping. When Liam-O asked, you did. The lad had gone a long way in a short time by being entirely devoid of restraint and dealing with those who didn't do as they were told with a terrifying ruthlessness. Chuck was glorified muscle, but he was house-trained and able to wipe his shoes and mind his P's and Q's well enough to be allowed indoors. Not something you could say for all of Liam-O's lieutenants. And so, Chuck had done as he was told, and carried Carol's bags, driven the car, and dutifully followed her around the shops, while she spent money like she had an infinite supply, which, seeing as her young fella was bringing half the drugs into Dublin, wasn't far off being true. One of the shops they'd visited had been Anne Summers. Carol Darcy was in her early 50s, a gym bunny with the body to match, and he'd sat there while she tried on outfit after outfit, enjoying watching him squirm. Chuck was as hot-blooded as the next man, but he was aware from the get-go that he was in dangerous territory. Pissing off the boss was a great way to end up with your hot blood spread across a wide area. Being the bloke dating Liamo's ma was a high-risk venture, but then, being the dude that had rejected her advances was, arguably, an even less desirable proposition. Which is why he'd talked to Liam before taking his ma out to dinner. It turned out Carol had other plans, and they'd not even got as far as dessert. The late Daddy Darcy had apparently been rather conservative in the bedroom area, and Carol had a list of things she wanted to try. A long list. Some items on the list had come with bibliographical references so he could read up on what was expected of him. Most of it, if Chuck was being honest, he hadn't been into. But Liam had made a big deal about him making his beloved ma happy, so he did everything that was asked of him. He doubted Liam's instruction had been meant in that context, but still. The affair, if you could call it that, had gone on for about 6 weeks, before Carol had called an end to it, much to Chuck's relief. What he was considerably less happy about was the fact that Carol had then cracked open a bottle of wine or three with her daughter-in-law and given her the highlights. Liam had never said anything, but the way he now looked at Chuck made it clear that the married couple had no secrets. As Daz had put it,
"Nobody likes the lad who 50 shades of greyed his ma."
Chuck was digging up somebody else's grave because he was keen to do whatever it took to make sure he didn't find himself up in the Wicklow Mountains with a gun to his head, digging his own. For all of that, worrying about Liamo's legendary temper wasn't even the worst part. It had been the innuendos, double entendres, single entendres, and other clunky attempts at repartee made by the lads at his expense. The point when Money Martin, the useless skinbag who couldn't even hold a torch correctly, started taking cheap shots at Chuck's expense, was the moment he decided that he'd give the world something else to remember him by. He could make the early ferry to Holyhead, and then they could see how quickly they could get someone to hunt him down. They'd find him eventually, but he wouldn't make it easy for them.
"All right," said Chuck. "Tell me, Money. What's got me in such a bad mood, then?"
Money sniffed and twirled his finger in the air. "Cemeteries. Can't help but make a man confront his own mortality." Chuck stopped for a second, briefly considering whether Money had any idea he'd just saved his own life, and then resumed digging.
"Is that right?"
"Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy."
"And you can blow that Shakespeare stuff out your arse and all,"
snapped Chuck, as he drove the shovel into the earth.
"Excuse me?"
"No, we won't. I never understood the obsession with Shakespeare. We're standing in a country founded by poets, trades unionists and dreamers. And yet our education system shoves Shakespeare down the throats of generation after generation."
"Big fan of the bard, are you?"
asked Money, condescension dripping from his voice, in a display of the poor instincts that were eventually going to get him killed.
"Fuck you! I don't need to go to university to read a book, you know. I'm not saying the man couldn't write, but the obsession with the work of one bloke who died over 400 years ago is ludicrous. Must drive living playwrights mad, this idea that everything stopped when old Willie popped his clogs, like nothing before or since could surpass the man. Case in point, Hamlet picks up Yardick's skull and starts chatting to it, like that's a normal thing to do. Veers dangerously close to ventriloquism, if you ask me."
Chuck felt the shovel finally hit wood. Thank God. He was starting to wonder how deep they'd buried this thing.
"And I'll tell you something else," he continued, as he redoubled his shoveling efforts, clearing the rest of the soil off the coffin, now he knew its depth. You know the reason the powers that be love carpet-bombing the youth with Shakespeare? It's because the man was a lot of things, but he was no revolutionary. He was all about currying favour with queens and cardinals. He didn't rock the boat. Hamlet can spend 5 acts staring at his navel, but he never contemplates why, as a prince, he should have some divine right to rule over Yorick and the rest. Because that's a question those in power would not like him to ask.
Well, that's...
Before Money could continue, they were interrupted by his phone ringing. The hum of Kanye West's Gold Digger sounded like the loudest thing in existence as it reverberated off the surrounding gravestones.
Turn that off, snarled Chuck.
It's Robbie,
replied Money, answering it. Robbie was one of the 2 lookouts that had been posted nearby in case someone wandered past and noticed what the pair were up to. Chuck stared up at Money as he answered the call.
What's up?
Said Money, standing there listening to the voice on the end of the line.
What's he saying?
Asked Chuck, looking around nervously to see if there were any signs of someone heading towards them.
The graveyard was as quiet as, well. Robbie says he's doing a McDonald's run. Wants to know if you want anything? What? The fuck he is? He's supposed to be keeping watch. If he's barred, he can come and do some digging.
Rolling his eyes, Money said,
Yeah, he says... You heard.
He laughed.
Yeah. You can say that again. All right. Laters.
What?
Snapped Chuck, as Money hung up the phone.
What?
He can say what again?
He said you're a buzzkill.
Chuck scratched at his forehead irritably.
We're not. On a night out, on the sauce, he hissed. We're robbing a grave.
We're not actually robbing it.
Yes, we are. We're digging it up,
said Chuck, recommencing precisely that.
But we're not taking anything, said Money.
We might be.
Their primary objective was to check if the thing was empty. But if it wasn't, they were to take pictures and a
DNA sample.
The way Liamo had said it, he clearly didn't know what they'd do with that when they got it either. But Chuck had been in no position to argue.
Who even is this guy anyway?
Chuck shook his head, but kept working away. Proof, if proof was ever needed, that Money was clueless.
Who even is this guy?
He repeated in a mocking tone.
You know nothing.
Money tisked and turned the light onto the gravestone.
Detective Sergeant Bernard Buddy McGarry. Jesus, said Chuck. Don't say the name.
Why?
Chuck realised he couldn't express why. As if saying it out loud would summon him like Beetlejuice, the Candyman or something. Chuck wasn't a religious man or superstitious,
but still. This. He'd done bad things in his life, things he wasn't proud of, but this.
If there was a heaven or a hell, this was the thing that was stamping his ticket for down south.
He's just some copper, said Money.
Not just some copper. The man was...
Chuck, still clearing the last layer of earth, struggled to find the words. He'd met Bunny twice and been arrested by him once. As these things went, Bunny had treated Chuck with respect. Some guards would have used the opportunity to put the boot in, but Bunny hadn't. He'd even allowed poor, daft Johnny Stevens, blubbing away as he had been, to ring his ma. The week before that, Chuck knew for a fact that Bunny had slammed Anto O'Reilly's head into a wall so hard that it had knocked a brick out. But then, Anto had never been very good at reading the room.
The man was what?
Asked Money.
Put it this way. You definitely don't want to be haunted by him.
Money laughed.
I'm not afraid of pigs, living or dead.
Show some respect. Alive, this man would have gone through you like shite through a goose. Even dead, I'd fancy his chances.
Yeah.
Don't,
snapped Chuck.
Say another word, or so help me God.
Even Money, clueless as he was, could pick up the warning signs in Chuck's tone. He fell silent, and stayed that way for the next minute or two, as Chuck scraped away enough of the remaining dirt. Once accomplished, Chuck glanced down at the lid of the coffin he was standing on. He felt the urge to bless himself, but resisted. Instead, he tossed the shovel up onto the grass and held out his hand.
Give me the crowbar.
Money did as instructed. Chuck stood there for a few seconds, holding the tool in his hands, his arms and shoulders aching from all the digging. For one mad moment, he considered saying no, tossing the crowbar away, climbing out, and pronouncing himself done with all this. The idea had an appeal to it. He also didn't fancy his chances of living to see another midnight. He bent over and worked the crowbar until it found the gap between the lid and the base of the coffin. The bite that told him he had purchase. He paused for a few seconds and closed his eyes. The prayers the Christian brothers had tried to beat into him had long been forgotten, and they'd have meant nothing to him anyway. Still, he offered up a silent apology. Chuck had no idea why he was doing this. His only guess was that it was some form of deliberate antagonism towards the guards on the part of Liamo.
If that was the idea, it struck Chuck as idiotic. You don't mess with a folk hero. This would annoy a whole lot of people who weren't in law enforcement. And all the stuff about taking a picture and getting a DNA sample? It dawned on Chuck that someone, somewhere, thought Bunny McGarry was alive. That was a whole other kind of mental. Chuck remembered the big funeral that had been held for him. More importantly, he remembered the man. In truth, a force of nature. The idea of him being dead was hard to fathom. The idea of him being somewhere quietly living incognito was even harder.
Are you?
Started Money.
Shut up, I'm doing it.
He moved his grip on the crowbar, the metal cold and slick in his hands.
There are moments.
Moments when you know that you're doing the wrong thing.
Beyond crime, or good, or bad.
Moments that you know are just plain wrong. Then the image of Liam O'Darcy staring down at him was conjured in his mind. It'd be a slow death. Nobody would be asking him questions, because Chuck had no answers anyone wanted to hear. It'd be slow, only because Liamo would want it to take as long as possible.
Screw it.
Chuck pulled the crowbar towards him, feeling the wood start to give.
What in the shitting hell do you think you're doing, ye scuttling gobshite?
Screamed a voice that was coming both from in the coffin and beyond the grave. The last Chuck saw of Money was him running off in the other direction before colliding with a statue of the Virgin Mary and tumbling to the ground. Money hadn't even recognised Bunny McGarry's voice, but when a coffin starts screaming abuse at you, knowing exactly who is doing the screaming isn't that important. Robbie rushed towards Chuck as he climbed over the fence to get out of the graveyard.
Why in the...
Chuck didn't even slow down as he punched Robbie square in the face and kept running. It was around 4.5 miles to the ferry terminal from Glasnevin Cemetery. Chuck sprinted all the way, collapsing onto the ticket desk when he finally got there. He would run for a long time. Years. Eventually, he ended up joining a religious cult just outside Swansea that promised salvation through fasting, prayer, and a lot of hallucinogenic drugs. 20 years later, he would still occasionally wake up screaming as a caustic Cork accent ripped through the still night air, calling him a scuttering gobshite.
Thanks for listening to The Bunnycast. If you'd like to hear more, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, as that way we know you want them to continue. The audiobooks of all the Dublin Trilogy are available from Audible, iTunes, and anywhere else audiobooks are sold. This podcast is written and presented by me, Cuaigh McDonald, with the stories being read by Morgan C. Jones. The audiobook production is by Sound Entertaining Limited. Podcast production is by Richard Massera, with the artwork done by Wonderwife. Copyright everything bar the music, McFory Inc. 2018. And speaking of the music, the killer track you're hearing right now is from Honour Among Thieves, a new band that is a merger of the Bible Code Sundays and Brand New Zeros. Do check them out.